DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th. Information at afi.com/silver or 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Heal DC. This is a special Memorial Day show, Fighting the Power, Organizing for Peace with Justice. This is Joni, and we will be on today until 12 noon. We have a two-hour special for this day, Memorial Day. We're going to be talking about a number of things. In a moment, we're going to be speaking with Larry Hamm, calling in from New Jersey on his way to visit the grave site of Black Civil War veterans who were not allowed to be buried in the grave sites with the white people. He's also going to be talking about George Floyd and the increase in police brutality since 5 years ago when George Floyd was murdered. And Engineer Kalia, if Larry doesn't come on soon, perhaps you can call him. I know he's traveling. After we speak with Larry, we're going to be spending the rest of the hour with some peace activists and labor activists. We will be talking about what is happening to services for veterans in the VA. They are major threats to these services. We'll be speaking with Letitia from the Union AFGE and Federal Unionist Network. We'll also be speaking with some people from Veterans for Peace, Michael Marceau, who is the lead person for the DC chapter of Veterans for Peace, and John Braxton, who has a very special story to tell about his journey starting in Vietnam. In fact, both John and Michael started with Vietnam journey, what they have been doing organizing for peace. And do we have Larry on yet? I just spoke to him a minute ago. Maybe we're going to need to transition to our next guest, and we'll jump in with Larry. I know he's going to be calling or on the Zoom.
I'm on.
Oh, you're on. Welcome, Larry.
Welcome. I'm on.
Very good.
Had a minor emergency, but it's all resolved now.
Okay, very good. Larry Hamm, for those of you who do not know Larry, he is often heard on our sister station, WBAI in New York City. He was on with us a few weeks ago. He is a very beloved activist from Newark, New Jersey, with an organization called People's Organization for Progress, or POP. That was founded back in the 80s. He works closely with Mayor Ross Baraka, which we talked about a few weeks ago. But this morning, he's here with us to talk about actually two things. He's on his way, I think, to a civil war. Tell the listeners where you are about to go to this morning.
All right. Well, we are on our way, members of the People's Organization for Progress. We're on our way to Pennington, New Jersey, to the Pennington African Cemetery. This is a cemetery established by black residents of Pennington in 1863, so that there would be, so that their brothers and sons and fathers who fought in the Civil War could be buried with dignity, because at that time, the black Union soldiers and the white Union soldiers couldn't be buried in cemeteries together. There were, believe it or not, there were segregated cemeteries. So you had this racial segregation from the cradle to the grave. And so that their family members that fought in the war could be buried with dignity. They put their money together. They purchased land and established the Pennington African Cemetery. And that was the name from the beginning. Interestingly, they didn't say the Pennington Black Cemetery. They said the Pennington African American Cemetery.
Wow. And have you been to the cemetery before?
Yes, there? I have. Over the years, we've been going, POP, People's Organization for Progress, we've been going to the Pennington African Cemetery for about two decades, periodically over two decades. I discovered the cemetery back in the early 2000s. It is managed by the Pennington African Cemetery Association, which is a volunteer organization of African Americans who've taken on the task of maintaining this cemetery, which is a very important historical site. And we've had contact with them over the decades, and we felt that we would visit again this Memorial Day weekend. And I'm sure this is a very aware, politically aware audience. Most people, well, many people know that Memorial Day has its origins in Decorations Day, which was a ceremonial activity that was started by black people back in the 19th century.
Right. And Larry, sometime in the future, we'll have to have you on with our folks from the D.C.'s very special African-American Civil War Museum, which is about to expand and reopen in the summer. And so that'll be a great thing for you to discuss with them. About how many people are with you on this journey this morning?
We have about 10 with us, but POP members are leaving from different cities in New Jersey, leaving from Englewood, Newark, Montclair, East Orange, and Piscataway, New Jersey. Now, that's not all of our members, but there are members leaving from different parts of the state, some of them because they live much closer to Pennington than where I am right now. I'm in Montclair, New Jersey, which is in Essex County, New Jersey.
Yes, I'm familiar with New Jersey, and I think one of our guests is as well, who is also from Newark, Letitia. But do you know, Larry, how many other cemeteries there are in the country or even in the region that are black cemeteries for black people?
I don't know the number, but I know it's more than I knew before, because there's a cemetery in Trenton, which is not far from Pennington, that also has the graves of Civil War soldiers, some of whom were African American. I think what distinguishes the Pennington cemetery, it was established by black people. That live, you know, that were living at that time in the 19th century. So if it was established in 1863, slavery had not yet ended in 1863. Lincoln had issued the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, which most folks know didn't free all black people. It was a military order. It was a military recruitment document that offered freedom to enslaved Africans who could escape from the state, counties, and parishes that were part of the Confederacy escaped their masters, crossed battle lines, and then joined the Union Army. And many African Americans answered the call. More than 200,000 Black people joined the different branches of the Union military services. About 180,000 joined the Union Army, and another 20,000 joined the Navy. And there were also others that were with the Coast Guard and some other branches of service. So we definitely answered that call and turned the tide of the Civil War.
Excuse me, everybody. If anybody is a guest who doesn't have their phone on mute, please put yourself on mute so we can hear our guest now this morning, Larry. Larry, we're going to definitely have you back to talk with our esteemed folks from the where there is a memorial for those Black soldiers who were killed and fought during the Civil War. Again, that museum is going to be expanding and reopening sometime, hopefully in the summer. And we also have our esteemed historian, C.R. Gibbs. So we're going to have the three of you on the air, on our airwaves.
I would love to meet them. I'm sure that there's a lot that I could learn from them. But, you know, one of the things I want to point out quickly before I go is that the Black soldiers in the Union Army not only had to fight the Confederacy, they had to struggle against racism in the Union Army itself. The irony of ironies, right? That's the very engine that was working to stop the Confederacy, that wanted to keep us enslaved in perpetuity. In fact, Black men faced racial oppression, racial discrimination, inequality, injustice within the Union forces. First of all, the Black soldiers died at a rate significantly higher than the white soldiers. They received lower pay than the white soldiers. They received inferior weapons and equipment. Sometimes the weapons didn't even work. You know, incomplete uniforms, you know, all kinds of problems. The Black and people who saw the movie Glory would remember this. The Black units had to have white commanders, you know, and there was racial segregation in the Union Army, and the Black troops were officially known. And we see this on the headstones. When we go to Pennington, to the African Cemetery, it says U.S. Colored Troops, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I want to say real quick.
But let me just jump in, Larry. And also, not only Black men, but women. And I'm going to call her our own Harriet Tubman, because we have Harriet Tubman's great-great-grandniece right here with us in Washington, D.C. Tina Wyatt, who's a frequent guest on this show. And of course, Harriet Tubman was discriminated against as she fought in that battle. And we'll probably have that discussion in June. I believe the battle in South Carolina took place in June. And Harriet Tubman was just recently honored, I think it was last year, or maybe even this year, for the work she did during the Civil War.
Harriet Tubman is deserving of all honor and praise that can be heaped on her. You know, she was called General Tubman.
Yes, yes.
And she not only did reconnaissance for the Union Army, she also led the Union forces in certain places. You know, she was General Tubman, and she did eventually, as famous as she was, she had to fight for her pension, which she eventually received. So, yes, you know, we must remember Harriet Tubman. You know, but the thing I was going to say real quick, I was noticing on the headstones that it said like Rhode Island Division, Connecticut, Pennsylvania. The Black men in New Jersey could not join the Union Army in New Jersey. They had to go to Pennsylvania. They had to go to Connecticut. They had to go to Rhode Island. Remember, New Jersey was the slave state of the North. People think slavery, they think it was some kind of Southern thing. It was a national thing. The very financial centers of the slave trade was New York City. It was in the North. It was Boston and other places. Perth Amboy, New Jersey, was one of the most active slave ports on the East Coast.
Wow.
New Jersey wasn't even among the 27 states. Now, think about this. New Jersey was part of the Union, but New Jersey was not among the 27 state majority that ratified the 13th Amendment. And after they ratified it, they tried to it's crazy. Lincoln didn't win New Jersey in 60. He didn't win New Jersey in 64. And when Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, the state legislature of New Jersey nullified Lincoln's power to emancipate slaves in the state. You know, wow. It's the history is very complex. And that's why that's one of the reasons why we having a hard time getting the reparations bill passed in our state legislature. They don't even want to establish the commission. The bill has been sitting in committee for 5 years. And when we go to lobby them, right, they don't even want to say, they'd be like, can we call it something else? Do we have to call it reparations? That's why we had the campaign say the word reparations. Because they didn't even want to say the word.
Wow.
You know, I'm sorry.
And we're going to have you on also with our own Nkechi Taifa, who's
I love Nkechi.
So she's
I saw Nkechi at Malcolm. We went to visit Malcolm X's gravesite, Malcolm and Betty Shabazz, on Monday, which was the 100th anniversary of Malcolm's birthday. And Nkechi was there. I saw
I know she was. She's part of our WPFW family, and she spoke to us from that site. Mm-hmm. Larry, let me make sure I remember. Also, this is a good time to mention that you just received a very important award related to Malcolm X. Please boast a little bit and share what award you just got.
Well, I don't know about boasting, but I was honored to receive this award. The New York chapter of the National Association of Coweta Organizations, NACO, together with the International Arts Festival, had their 56th annual Malcolm X Black Unity Awards on Saturday, May 17th. And I was privileged to be one of the three awardees to receive the Malcolm X Unity Award on the plaque it said for my 55 years, you know, of involvement in the struggle. So it was a great honor. I mean, I have awards, but that's the only one I have that have Malcolm X's name on. And not only did they put the name, they put that quote by Malcolm. You know, we're going to be respected as human beings by any means necessary.
That's right.
So that's on the award.
That's right. Well, congratulations, Larry. Well deserved. And we're going to jump in a minute to you sharing about George Floyd, but just share with our listeners the photo you sent me with people holding up signs about "We will not forget. We will."
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, POP has a number of banners, people who have seen photographs of us participating in marches and in our own marches. We just put it in black and white, right? And we have a number of banners that relate to reparations, relate to enslavement. And the photo you saw that I sent you last year with two photos, we have, they are brothers up here in Jersey, and I'm sure you have them down there with the Civil War music that do and dress up in the original uniforms of the Civil War soldiers have, and they carry the weapons, you know. And the last year when the brother came that was dressed like the Civil War, and he had the weapon, the long rifle. I picked that rifle. That rifle was heavy. I was surprised because I fired guns. I fired, you know, rifles, you know, modern weapons, right? The difference in weight between the rifles that they carried and the rifles we carry today was very significant, you know. And So he was there, and then we had a number of our banners pointing out that 180,000 black men served in the Union forces to defeat the Confederacy, and another banner was never forget, slavery, and another banner was Frederick Douglass, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. We have a lot of banners like that, we try to do banners around all the issues that we protest about. And so since the founding of People's Organization for Progress, this issue of Black history and the struggle for reparations, and other issues, we have banners for all of those things.
Well, we're thankful to have you on for this particular holiday. We hope to bring you down to D.C. soon. But before you leave, and we have our next guest waiting to jump in for the next segment, but share with us that one of the reasons that I asked you on this morning is we're also, of course, Memorial Day, giving a memorial to George Floyd, not only to George Floyd, who was killed by the police, but to all those, particularly black people and other people, but mostly black people who were murdered by the police. Mm-hmm. You have some information to share about the increase in police murders. But before you go there, I just wanted to raise up and honor those people that we know in Washington, D.C., who were killed by the police in the last 5 years. And I want to particularly mention my friend who was whose son was killed by the police. It's going to be, I think, 2 summers ago. So we give honor to all of those who lost their lives unjustly by being murdered by the police. But share with us, Larry, the significant increase in police killings since the death of George Floyd.
Yes, absolutely. The 25th yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. We participated in a program memorializing George Floyd and all the other victims of police brutality. Hold on one second, please. Yeah.
And again, my friend who lost his son, his name was, yes. My friend's name is James Sherrod, and his son was killed, and he was, I think, 31 years old, killed last August 2 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, so we had a program on Friday, and it was really centering on our cultural artists in the area, and they came forward with poetry and other presentations about George Floyd. Very powerful. But the fact remains that since the murder of George Floyd, the number of people killed by the police has increased every year, has increased mathematically, meaning it's a greater number than the year before. So last year, the police in the United States killed 1,223 people in the United States. Now, keep in mind, that's just the number of people killed. Now, the police in America kill more people than the police in any other country on the face of the earth. I mean, think about that. That's something to think about. We have nearly 1 million sworn police officers in the United States. China has 1.2 billion people. That's 4 times the 330 million people, 336 million people we have in the United States. But yet our police kill more people than the police in China. But think about this. Add to that number the people who were shot but survived. Mm-hmm. Add to that number the people who were in some way brutalized by the police. Add to that number the people who were harassed or had their constitutional rights violated. When you put all of that together, you see a really damning picture of police repression in the United States. And this country has the nerve. Trump had the nerve to preach to Cyril Ramaphosa or preach to other countries in the world. We're the biggest violators of human rights. We're the biggest violators
That's
of human
right.
rights in the United States. And I can remember, when people all around the world. It was a worldwide movement, Black Lives Matter, worldwide movement, demanding justice for George Floyd. It was so deep. Politicians and police directors, they were getting in the marches, jumping in front. Everybody was promising reform. Everybody was talking about, we're going to end chokeholds. We're going to end no-knock warrants. We're going to let people establish. None of that legislation has been passed. The George Floyd accountability and policing bill was not passed. In here in New Jersey, the police review board with subpoena power bill did not pass. Not only have they not passed, but the Trump administration has come in, and what little police reform that was in place, they've totally undone all of that. They just announced the other day that the Justice Department is going to end consent decrees, where these municipal governments enter into agreements about how they're going to improve their police forces to end police. They're not going to do that anymore. Consent decrees that are already in place, they're going to dissolve them. Police investigations that are going on, they're going to end them. People should remember that the National Fraternal Order of Police, the National Police PBA, Police Benevolent Association, the National Association of Police Supervisors, all of them endorse Donald Trump. They are part of this fascist movement. All of them endorse Trump. So it should come as no surprise that he's keeping his pledges to them to undo any type of effort for police reform.
Absolutely. Larry, we're going to have you back soon. Sorry, we have our other guests waiting, but I'm so glad you could join us. Larry, calling from New Jersey on his way to take a whole team of people to the African-American Civil, well, say again what the cemetery is called.
It's called the Pennington African Cemetery. It's located at 413 South Main Street in Pennington, New Jersey. And what I would urge people to do, you can Google it. It'll come right up. They have a website, Facebook page, and everything. But I really would urge people, particularly Black people, to find the graves of civil rights, of Civil War soldiers, those Black men. And there were some women that served in the Union Army, and honor them. You know, if not, laid down their lives to end slavery. 40,000 Black men were killed during the Civil War. The rate of death of the Black Civil War soldiers was higher than the rate of death of the white soldiers. Mm-hmm. The Black soldiers were paid less money. The Black soldiers had to suffer from worse conditions. You know, a lot of times when the Confederates took Civil War soldiers prisoner, they would keep the white soldiers as prisoners of war, and they would shoot and kill the Black soldiers. You know, people, they had a slogan back then in the 19th century, remember Fort Pillow, because that's one of the places where such a massacre took place.
Wow. Larry, we're going to have you back with Frank Smith, the founder of the African-American Civil War Museum and affiliated with SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So we're going to continue this conversation beyond just today, Memorial Day, because it's very important what you're talking about.
And don't forget the struggle against reparations. This recognition of Black Civil War soldiers is related
absolutely
to the struggle for reparation. They stole us, they sold us, they owe us.
Absolutely. And reparations is something that we here in WPFW talk about all the time. So we will definitely continue to fight for real reparations in this country of ours. Larry, thank you very much for everything you do. Congratulations on your award. And we look forward to hearing back from you very soon.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Okay, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. This is Joni with a special edition of To Heal DC. We're going to 12 noon. We're going to be spending the rest of our time together with some very special activists organizing right here in the present time of 2025. We're going to be speaking with Letitia, who is a member of the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, and also involved with an organization that we've had on this show numerous times, FUN, Federal Unionist Network. We're going to be asking Leticia to jump on in a moment. We also have, in addition to Leticia, we have two activists with Veterans for Peace, and I'm going to ask them to introduce, actually, I'm going to ask her, all three of our guests to introduce themselves in a moment, but John Braxton was resisted going to that war in Vietnam back in the day and served time in prison for his resistance, now is involved with the Veterans for Peace, talking about the importance of unifying, working together, having labor work together with veterans to really try as a tool to stop this never-ending war and this horrific war that's going on in Gaza. We also have Mike Merceau, who is also a veteran with Veterans for Peace, who served in Vietnam and was injured. I'm going to ask each one of you actually to briefly introduce yourselves, and then we're going to jump in with Leticia talking about what is happening with the services in the VA, in the Veterans Administration, that are being threatened. But let's start with Leticia. Leticia, welcome. Please introduce yourself briefly, and then we'll come right back to you with more details.
No problem. Good morning, Joni, and good morning to the listeners and my fellow guests. My name is Leticia Thompson. I am a rank and file member of the American Federation of Government Employees. We are about 820,000 strong across the country, with about 135,000 workers at the VA. I just want to let you know today I am not speaking as a representative of my agency. I'm speaking in my personal capacity as a union member, as well as a member of the Federal Unionist Network.
Yes, and we're very proud of the Federal Unionist Network, which we've done a lot with them on this program, better known as FUN. And we'll come back to you in a moment, Leticia. Michael Merceau, welcome and introduce yourself to our listeners. You've been on with us at other Memorial Days, but let our listeners know who you are.
Yes, good morning, folks. Wishing you a quiet and peaceful Memorial Day. I was born and raised in this area. I got my draft notice on my 20th birthday in 1969. Was in Vietnam by September of 1969, on May 6th of 1970, which was 55 years ago. Earlier this month, I got critically injured in a rocket attack. Spent a month in hospital in Vietnam, 8 months at Walter Reed, was medically retired in 1971. Had some issues with substance abuse for a long time. Finally got sober in 87 and found Veterans for Peace in about 2005. They were actually part of a vigil at Walter Reed Hospital every Friday, and that was pretty close to my heart. So I jumped in there with them and have been involved with the DC chapter ever since then. Unfortunately, COVID kind of put a spell on us, and we kind of fell apart at that point, but I still try to show up for various actions and support other organizations who are working for peace and justice. And the last few months, of course, speaking against the guy in the White House and trying to make people aware of how badly this Project 2025 is turning out to be. So I will continue to be in the streets as often as I can. So to be with everyone this morning.
Great. And we hope to see you out there. And I hope to see you out there in the streets. Just give our listeners a brief explanation of Veterans for Peace. Some people may not have heard of it.
We were actually formed in 1865. Sorry, I'm thinking Civil War stuff. We were actually formed in 1980. Well, that's a good topic to talk about Memorial Day. But Veterans for Peace was formed in 1985, mainly as a result of the nuclear arms race and some of the interference in governments in Central and South America. So There were five main principles. I'll be very brief. The first one is we want to increase the public awareness of the causes and the cost of war. Second one was keep our government from interfering in the internal affairs of other countries. We want to end the arms race and eliminate nuclear weapons. The fourth one is to seek justice for all victims of war, especially veterans. And on Memorial Day, I always think of the Vietnamese who lost their lives in the American War in Vietnam. And the fifth one was to abolish war as an instrument of national policy. We also added another one a few years ago, and that was to oppose the militarization of the police forces. And we know that started in about 1990 with a lovely program called the 1033 program, which gave surplus military equipment to local police forces. And what brought that to my attention was the Michael Brown death in August of 2024 in 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri. And my first thought was, what in heck is a small town like Ferguson, Missouri doing with an armored personnel carrier going against unarmed civilians in the streets who are protesting the death of a fellow citizen by police officers?
Okay, we're gonna I want to move on because I have a lot of we're trying to cover a lot of things, but thank you, Michael, for letting people who didn't know about Veterans for Peace, I seem to remember them even back in the 70s, very important organization. But I want to introduce to have F. John W. Braxton, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey. Briefly, what happened when you refused to sign up for that war in Vietnam, and what are some of your goals? Briefly now, and then we will have time for both you and Michael, as well as Leticia, as well as in the second hour. So we still have time, but welcome, John.
Thank you. It's great to be here with all these really great guests. I'll actually go back in my personal history a little before I refused to cooperate with the draft. I was a member of the crew of a Quaker ship that delivered medical supplies. It was a sailboat that took medical supplies from Hiroshima, Japan, to Hong Kong, and then to North Vietnam during the war. I was actually there during the Tet Offensive in 1968. And so seeing the effects, I was already opposed to the war, but seeing the effects of the war firsthand by being in Haiphong Harbor really solidified my opposition to the war. And so even though I was raised as a Quaker and was given a conscientious objector status, I decided that I wasn't going to cooperate with that system at all. And so I publicly sent my draft cards back to my draft board and told them I wasn't going to do any of the work under that system. And they, of course, turned me over to the Justice Department. And eventually I was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison and served about 16 and a half months in federal prison before I was released on parole. But I've been then an activist ever since then. Really, Vietnam really for me kind of solidified my decision that, you know, that we just need to put every ounce of energy we can figure out how to put into bringing peace and justice to this world. And so currently, I'm working with Veterans for Peace. I'm what they call an associate member, since I'm not an actual veteran of the war, although you could say I'm a member of the Quaker Navy, but there really isn't such a thing. So, we're working with Veterans for Peace and trying to bring labor support for the peace movement. And we can talk more about that.
Yes. Yes. What we're going to do now, and we're going to hear from Leticia right after this song, but we're going to play a song that goes back to the days in Vietnam. So, Kalia, Let's hear it.
Give me an F. Give me a U. Give me a C. Give me a K. What's that spell? Well, come on, all of you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam, way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-hoo, we're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. Why, man, this is war, a go-go. There's plenty good money to be made, supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just hope and pray that if they drop the bomb, they drop it on the Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die. Now come on, generals, let's move fast. Your big chance is here at last. Now you can go out and get those reds, cause the only good commie is one that's dead. And you know that peace can only be won when you're blowing them all the kingdom come. Sing it! 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for?
Country Joe and the Fish. Some of us remember that song back in the day. Country Joe was also an activist himself, as was his parents. I believe his parents were caught during the so-called Red Scare back in the 1950s. So glad we could play that song. We're going to jump from Vietnam to the present day. Of course, we have a horrific genocide happening in Gaza, which many countless thousands, if not millions of us, are organizing to try to stop that genocide. But we also have concerns about the services being available from the Veterans Administration. And again, we'd like to welcome Letitia, calling all the way from Philadelphia, to talk about what some of the concerning potential actions, as well as a recent victory, but potential actions about from the president of this so-called president of this country trying to significantly cut services for veterans. So welcome, Letitia.
Thanks again, Joni. I'm so honored to be speaking to you, our guests and our listeners today. As a great-granddaughter of a World War II veteran and a servant, a co-worker, a niece, a neighbor, cousin, and a best friend to many active duty personnel, reservists, and U.S. military veterans spanning all the way from the Vietnam War to post-9/11 eras, many of which, you know, have looked forward to or already enjoyed their second line of duty, which is joining the federal workforce. Currently, U.S. military veterans make up about 30% of the federal workforce, and about 1 in 5 of all my coworkers at my agencies are also veterans. You know, just to share some additional stats about the workforce, you know, we are cemetery workers, we are housekeepers, we are cooks, we are mechanics, we're social workers, we're nurses, and a bevy of other healthcare employees. You know, 64% of our employees are in fact women. So plans to cut would have deleterious effects on veterans, their families, without a doubt, as many of them I serve alongside as a worker. Yeah, the plan right now is to cut 80,000 workers. That is correct. You heard that number correctly. 80,000 workers by the end of September.
And how? I'm sorry, maybe you said it earlier, but 80,000, about what percentage of that, or what's the total number of VA?
Yeah, so staff? the last reported stats was about 482,000. So that would be like roughly 15% of our workforce cut.
Oh, wow. And can you briefly describe what, if that were to happen, what the impact would might be?
For sure. I mean, I think more of what we already know, which is disruption and chaos, right? We're talking about people who handle benefits claims, that deliver healthcare, that secure the data of many veterans and employees around the country. Critical medical research would become unstable. And of course, employment for 100,000 former service members would be at risk. 6,000, in fact, already this year, Joni, were let go during the firing, the firing of 20,000 probational employees. Yeah, it's not good.
And we're going to talk about, well, we can talk about it now, that there's a big rally coming up on June 6th, I believe it is. And I think most of us have not heard about it yet. So tell us what's going to be going on June 6th.
Yeah. So within the American Federal AFL-CIO, there is a group called the Union Veterans Council. They seek to represent, you know, veteran workers all across the federal government. As I mentioned before, they make up about 30% of our federal workforce. So this particular group is trying to build a coalition. June 6th, thousands of military families, veterans, and allies like myself will meet on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. We are coming together to defend exactly what we talked about earlier, the benefits, the jobs, and the dignity that every generation of veterans has earned through sacrifice. We cannot stand by and let these services go. They won't return. So just north of the Smithsonian, just north of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, where 6th Street crosses the mall, that's where we will be rallying.
Wow. Okay. And hopefully we will hear more about that in the next almost 2 weeks before that rally takes place. But apparently there was a victory that happened perhaps over the weekend. Tell us what happened.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. So as many may know, there is an action called reduction in force. It's essentially mass layoff, otherwise known as RIFs. They're mass layoffs that can be instructed by both the Congress and the executive branch if needed. Usually it's around budget. So there, like I mentioned before, there was about 80,000 jobs projected to be lost from the VA and many more across the nation. In fact, thousands have been fired already. We're talking about people who ensure that our air and water are clean. We're talking about people who deliver your mail. We're talking about people who ensure that there is public education for all in this country. Those would have, you know, very, very bad impacts, not only on veterans, but also the general American public. So luckily, through the legislative efforts and litigation efforts of my union and many others, many other Fed unions, they filed lawsuits opposing this reorganization plan. And as a result, a 2-week restraining order was ruled. That 2 weeks ended this past Friday, and the judge made another decision and a more sustained ruling that it is actually illegal for this administration to reorganize the federal government in that way at this scale without consulting with Congress. I have no doubt that the efforts of veterans, many federal unionists, and also just allies who care and want to see our public services last for many generations are very responsible for that victory. So I just, you know, want to show that, you know, the town halls, the rallies, the press conferences, they all matter. We have mounted a campaign against this administration to say, hands off our services. Let us work. we all as federal workers have chosen to uphold the constitutional oath to serve the public. And that's all we want to continue to do. Sadly, a lot of these efforts are under the guise of efficiency and getting rid of fraud, waste, and abuse. But we know the truth. The truth is that they are looking at this point to fund the coffers of their billionaire friends with these cuts, right? There is supposedly this thought of, you know, these cuts leading to somehow us getting out of the trillions of dollar deficit that we're in. But it's not true. The reconciliation bill that just passed the House, unfortunately, seeks to cut healthcare benefits of federal workers, which will also include U.S. military veterans. And we know if the workers go, the services will go. It is a direct linkage and they won't be coming back. So, yeah, we've watched this administration time and time again, you know, just spew untruths. They said that they would not sacrifice veterans benefits due to the budget, that they will take care of veterans and the loss of jobs will be as small as possible. I'm not a mathematician, but 80,000 sounds like a whole lot of workers to me, you know, and there's no way those workers will go and there will not be a negative impact on healthcare of veterans benefits and their beneficiaries. This is not about eliminating waste or bureaucracy. This is not a belief or a value that employees are valuable. This is about attacking our public services. And it's essentially, it is up to us, veteran, worker, ally alike, to defend our democracy.
Our so-called democracy, some of us would say. It's interesting that I haven't heard anything about this victory. In fact, I think I would say that we've heard very little about what threats there are to the VA. We've heard about a lot about some of the other federal agencies that have been attacked, including the Department of Education, Health and Human Services, but there's very little, I think, being discussed about the VA. So I think the organizing that you are doing is really critical in terms of the Federal Unionist Network and AFGE. If people want more information, and again, I wouldn't have heard about this rally if it hadn't been for you. So if people want information about the upcoming rally or other things that are happening in terms of the VA being attacked, is there an email that they can go to or a way they can find out, perhaps from the Federal Unionist Network?
For sure. Thank you, Joni. One point I did want to highlight in terms of what segment is truly being under attack at our agency is research. You know, many people don't know, but you know, VA is a critical, you know, hub for research in this country. They stand alongside the National Institute of Health as well, in that VA research has been responsible for things like the nicotine patch, prosthetics, cardiac pacemaker, successful liver transplants, the development of the CT scan, new drugs for many chronic illnesses, helping veterans and civilians alike. And for a lot of the cuts that have happened thus far among our workers within AFGE, you know, it's affecting, it has the potential to affect up to 10,000 veterans' medical care. We're talking about life-saving care. And what is interesting is the cuts to research are on the basis of DEI, which we all know this administration has a very broad and vague definition of this, not realizing that they would be impacting even their own voters who, you know, the 65% of military veterans who actually voted for Trump. We're talking about impacts even on rural white America and that. So, yeah, I would like to see more media coverage distinctively on these attacks. However, a good way to get plugged in for the rally would be uniteforveterans.org. Again, that's unite, the number 4, veterans, plural, .org. You know, and there's many calls to action right now. Like, you can join the Federal Unionist Network, no matter if you're a hired Fed, a fired Fed, a retiree, a veteran, or a community member. Go to savepublicservices.com. Again, that's savepublicservices.com. And I have a few other calls to action that I hope to share later on in our program.
Okay, yes, we still have our second hour coming up soon. And again, please share what, one more time for this hour, what's happening on June 6th, the time and the location.
Sure. So again, veterans, their families, allies are coming together on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., of course, the Unite for America rally. When is it happening? Friday, June 6th at 2 p.m. Eastern. And folks are meeting just north of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, where 6th Street crosses the mall.
Okay. And I'm going to ask our two other guests briefly. We're going to have more time. At the top of the hour, we're going to hear from the uncle of somebody who is known to some of us on WPFW. I'll introduce them in a moment at the 11 o'clock hour. But perhaps John Braxton, and if we have time, Mike, could jump in and talk about how this situation with the cuts to the VA is an example of the need for labor and veterans to work more closely together to organize for justice. If you could just briefly talk about that, John Braxton, and then we'll come back to it again in our 11 o'clock hour.
Sure. I've been on a couple of picket lines here in Philadelphia with the Federal Unionist Network. It's very clear that what President Trump is doing is trying to gut the benefits for veterans. He can't actually just do that easily, but if he cuts back on the number of workers in the Veterans Administration, then, you know, then it's going to just make it much harder for people to get their benefits. So, yeah, we are building support for within the labor movement to fight all of these cutbacks. And of course, part of the whole problem is that the Pentagon is eating up about half of our discretionary tax dollars. Mm. And so some of those tax dollars definitely ought to be going to the Veterans Administration to hire more people and get more benefits to veterans, rather than what Trump is doing, which is really to cut back on veterans, who he has, by the way, referred to as being losers, which is just, you know, a despicable thing for anybody to say for people who answered the call of their government to go to war.
Not to mention the president, so-called president of the United States. And I'm very thankful, John W. Braxton, to meet you. I first heard about you because you last week convened a Zoom meeting to discuss this very question of how labor and Veterans for Peace should be working more closely together. Can you just summarize that in 1 minute?
1 minute, yes. And then we could talk more later. Mm-hmm. We've started within Veterans for Peace a labor working group. And what we're trying to do is to try to bring the power of the labor movement and the power of the peace movement together. And so one of the main things that we're working on right now is, and it'll be a long-term campaign, is to support a bill called the People Over the Pentagon Act that would cut the Pentagon spending by $100 billion, which is a lot of money, but it's only 11% of the Pentagon's budget. And
wow,
that $100 billion could be much, much better put to use for education, healthcare, veterans benefits, and climate change mitigation.
Absolutely.
There's so many pressing needs, and it's just terribly ironic, or worse than ironic, that the president is trying to cut everything else in the federal budget, but not the Pentagon. He's proposing to increase the Pentagon spending by $150 billion.
$150 billion. And meanwhile, people don't have food to eat, and increasingly, certain